Welcome. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. This is Karen Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Modern Maturity. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from several sources. I'm going to start with a couple of articles from AARP, the magazine, under the heading of Real People, Inspiring Stories of Friends and Neighbors in Their Own Words. We're going to start with the Jumping Jasmine, from record-setting athlete to recording artist. Olympic long jump legend Bob Beamon on returning to his first passion, music. The key to learning something new is total commitment. You've got to shut out the part of your brain that finds excuses. It's like when I was getting ready to take my long jump in the 1968 Olympics in Mexico City. I had worked hard, and it was my time to perform well. I won a gold medal that day and set an Olympic record, 8.90 meters, 29 feet, 2.5 inches. That hasn't been broken yet. But my first passion was not sports, it was percussion. When I was around 9, I asked my family to get me a pair of bongos, and I taught myself. I would play with my friends just banging on whatever we could find to make a sound. At the same time, I was doing well in track and field and basketball. It got to the point where I thought, okay, I've got to make a choice, and it's going to be sports. I never forgot music, though. I was always surrounded by it. I have a collection of 8,000 albums. About 3 years ago, I contacted my cousin, Al Brisbane, the bassist with the band Styx Bones and the Bone Squad, and said, I need to make music again. He introduced me to Styx Bones, the band's leader, who agreed to help me get my hands back in shape. I worked with Styx and Bobby Thomas Jr., who played with Weather Report 3 to 4 hours a day for a year. Then Styx invited me to make an album with the band. In my honor, they called it Olympic Soul. It's jazz mixed in with hip-hop and a lot of other beats. The album came out last year. Even though I had to work hard to get to where I am musically, I can't say I ever got frustrated. I would use mistakes to think about how I could do better. Music is bigger than me. I'm always trying to be as big in my playing as what I can hear in my head. And this story was as told to Beth Levine. Bob Beamon, 79, who is also a graphic artist, lives in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. And next we have the bookstore that comes to you. Rita Collins never dreamed how far her traveling shop would take her. People told me it wouldn't work. My small town of Eureka, Montana, didn't have a bookstore. So in 2014, I took a course on how to start one. Day one, they said, a town of 1,400 won't support a book business unless you already own a building on Main Street. I didn't. So I started brainstorming and landed on the idea of a traveling used bookstore. Within 6 months, I had found a used van. Friends designed and built the shelves. I asked everyone I knew for book donations. That's how I got most of my stock. I didn't have a business plan. I thought, worst case, I'll sell the van. I called it St. Rita's Amazing Traveling Bookstore and Textural Apothecary. The Rita isn't me, though. She's one of the patron saints of impossible causes. At first, I set up around my county. Before I knew it, I was in Indiana, Tennessee, South Dakota, California. I had logged more than 100,000 miles in nearly 40 states, almost always staying with friends or friends of friends. If the van could talk, I think she would say she feels intrepid, going to all these places and meeting all these people. The kindergartner who insisted she was going to learn to read before first grade. The cop I thought was going to write me a ticket until he quietly asked, "Do you have any Louis L'Amour books?" I did. Last year, I traded in my van for a newer one. It fits 700 books. Hardbacks are $9. Paperbacks are $7. Kids' books, $1. I like to keep it simple. A customer once asked, "You do realize this is a first edition of Dune?" I said, "I'm happy for you." Reading can bridge divides between us. It opens our minds to travel, spirituality, languages, cooking, fantasy worlds. I love that my van invites people in, sparks conversations. I'm basically just covering my costs, but I'm very glad when someone finds a book that speaks to them. Sometimes people like to dwell on things they did in the past. What I love about this bookstore adventure is that it's about what's ahead. As long as we're alive, we have a chance to make new stories to tell. And this was as told to David Hockman. Retired teacher Rita Collins, 74, recently relocated to Baltimore. Her 2026 plans include a bookshop trip through Alabama and the Carolinas. Next, one veteran story. A Medal of Honor, long overdue. U.S. Army veteran Dwight W. Birdwell, on waiting more than 50 years to receive full recognition for his courage in battle. I am hesitant to talk about what happened that day, January 31, 1968. A lot of brave men lost their lives or were gravely wounded. At Tan Son Hoot Air Base near Saigon, we were two platoons, no more than 80 U.S. Army troops total, facing at least 1,000 Viet Cong soldiers who were trying to capture the base. In the fighting, one of our platoons was completely wiped out. Those of us who were left in the other platoon received fire from both sides. My tank commander was seriously wounded, so I took charge. At one point, I ran through gunfire to collect more ammunition from disabled vehicles. I was wounded in my face and torso, but our platoon was able to keep the enemy at bay until help arrived. Then we gained the upper hand and secured the safety of the airbase and Saigon itself. My commanding officer on that day, Lieutenant Colonel Glenn Otis, let me know that he was going to initiate a process for me to be considered for the Medal of Honor, the nation's highest honor for valor in battle. But before he could complete the process, he was gravely wounded and evacuated. I was awarded the Silver Star, which is nothing to sneeze at, but it's not the same thing. I'm a citizen of the Cherokee Nation. I got a lot of flack for that in Vietnam. People said, "Don't give him firewater or he'll go crazy, or he'll scalp us while we're sleeping." Along with Mexican soldiers and black soldiers, I faced this kind of prejudice again and again, and I had to wonder whether the color of my skin had anything to do with my not getting put in for the Medal of Honor. When I got back to the States, I was surprised by the attitude of a lot of people I encountered. Compared to veterans of Korea, World War II, and World War I, it was a cold reception. In 1981, I met up with Glenn Otis, who was then a four-star general. He asked what happened with the Medal of Honor. When I told him, nothing, he said, "Someday we're going to get that corrected." Later on, he initiated the process, and he designated a retired major named Jerry Headley to see it through in the event of his death. Otis died in 2013, but Headley and a Vietnam vet named Bob Pettigo kept working on the medal process, which is really rigorous. Finally, in 2022, I was awarded the medal by President Joe Biden. I was very, very honored that day, and I still am. Having the medal has changed my outlook somewhat. It has helped me to offset some of the bitterness of the past. But I must say, as honored as I am, the medal is really for the guys who were killed that day, the guys who were seriously wounded, and their families. I will never forget them or what they sacrificed. I'm the one who received the medal, but it belongs to them too. And this story was told to A.J. Baim. Former U.S. Army Specialist 5, Dwight W. Birdwell, 77, is a retired attorney now in Oklahoma. And we have one more real people story. No business like shoe business. The cobbler who charms the internet. how Jim McFarland found social media fame by sharing his family's craft. He's known online as America's Cobbler, but in college, Jim McFarland had no interest in joining his father's shoe repair business. The small chain of Lakeland, Florida shops felt like a family curse, recalls McFarland, 61. It's not an easy way to make a living. But then his father became ill, and McFarland left college at age 20 to lend a hand while he recovered. I loved my dad more than anything in the world, McFarland says. I had no choice. I had to help him. McFarland eventually took over one of the shops, becoming his family's fourth generation in the trade. Today, that shop is the last part of the family business still standing, and McFarland has ridden his profession to social media success. As of this writing, his TikTok account, America's Cobbler, has 1.3 million followers and over 26 million likes. He also has large followings on Instagram and YouTube. He's a fierce advocate for investing in well-made shoes and learning how to take care of them. If more people bought good quality shoes, they could rebuild them many times over, he says. McFarland's TikTok presence started a few years back when his daughter Victoria decided to create an account for him. His first video, in which he shows how to put toe plates on a shoe, debuted in March 2021, and it was an instant hit. Victoria still shoots his videos, by the way. I figured some people may just find the craft itself to be cool or informative, Victoria says. I definitely did not expect people to find it so satisfying to watch. The videos cover a lot of ground, demonstrating such skills as replacing soles and adding new heels. In comments, viewers compare McFarland's repairs to a piece of art and claim the videos relax them. This really calms me down for hard times, one person commented. McFarland estimates that he repairs close to 500,000 shoes during his career. But even he has encountered the occasional shoe that's too far gone to save. I got 3 pairs of boots in my shop right now that would take an absolute divine miracle to repair, McFarland says with a laugh. That's the hardest part of my job sometimes, telling a customer that their shoes cannot be fixed. People can get emotional when they learn it's the end of the line for their treasured footwear, he says. Sometimes the only hope I can give people is, well, at least your shoe has a sole, so it'll probably go to heaven. And this was as told Eric Spitznagel. Now, in the same magazine, under the heading of For You, we're reading inspiring stories of veterans fulfilling lifelong dreams at wishofalifetime.org. Jacqueline Thomas, 62, Kids and Technology, Memphis. This organization provides hands-on learning experiences to youths in science, math, and reading. It also offers tutoring for students in Memphis area schools and runs weekend programs designed to help attract students to science, technology, math, and engineering. Larry McCord, 73, Chad's Coalition for Mental Health, St. Louis. Founded in memory of McCord's son, who took his own life, Chad's trains students, parents, and counselors to prevent suicide and provides counseling for youths and young adults. The organization's programming has been shown to reduce depression symptoms. Purpose Prize winners, honoring older Americans who spend their lives helping others. 6 older Americans who have made important contributions to building a better world have been named the winners of the AARP Purpose Prize Award, which recognizes nonprofit founders age 50 and up. Each recipient's organization will receive $75,000 from AARP and a year of support to grow their organization. The winners will be honored at a celebration in Washington, D.C. Next honoree here, Alyssa Manspizer, 59, Land Force, Pittsburgh. This career development enterprise offers paid training and work experience in land conservation and environmental restoration. Crew members work on conservation projects around the Pittsburgh area, receiving one-on-one career coaching and learning other skills. Hal Garman, 89, and Spence Limbacher, 82. Gaithersburg Beloved Community Initiative, Gaithersburg, Maryland. GBCI runs mentorship programs between older adults and local students, and an English language program for adults. The organization also advocates for community improvements, such as the rebuilding of a local school. And lastly, Aaron Casillas, 54, Mycelia Foundation, Las Cruces, New Mexico. Mycelia Foundation builds affordable broadband infrastructure for older Americans and others in underserved areas of New Mexico. Its Digital Navigator program also provides bilingual training, free laptops, and ongoing technical assistance. Now I'm going to look at an article from AARP, The Bulletin. Be wise when being charitable. And this is state news from the Mid-Atlantic, and this particular article was on Spotlight West Virginia. Any season brings out the joy of giving to loved ones and charities, but AARP's West Virginia and state consumer officials urge generous folks to make sure they are giving to legitimate charitable organizations, not criminals. In West Virginia, more than 2,500 imposter scams were reported to authorities last year, according to data from the Federal Trade Commission. We know that these types of crimes are typically underreported, said Gaylene Miller, AARP West Virginia State Director. Be vigilant and do your homework to ensure your charitable contributions are going to a legitimate organization or cause. She and state officials urge donors to check the West Virginia Secretary of State's database of charitable organizations to make sure the group is legitimate. And I'm sure this goes for any state. A big red flag is a group that uses pressure tactics, says Kimberly Mason, Director of Investigations for the West Virginia Secretary of State. Mason says bad actors stress urgency to prevent people from doing their research, and they tug on heartstrings with pleas to help those in need. Just pause. Do your research first, she says. Here are a few tips from the West Virginia Attorney General's office. Don't give cash. Most legitimate charities accept donations by check or credit card, not cash, gift cards, cryptocurrency, or wire transfers. Check the name of the charity carefully. Scammers sometimes use names that are similar to legitimate charities. Go directly to the charity or organization's website instead of clicking on a link. And you can also go to AGO, A-G-O. Well, this is a website for West Virginia. So let's look at this article about Virginia supporting caregivers. In honor of National Family Caregivers Month last November, AARP Virginia is working to help nearly 1 million family caregivers in the state, who in 2021 provided $14.3 billion in unpaid care for loved ones. Family caregivers are the invisible backbone of our long-term care system, said Jared Kelfi, State Advocacy Director from AARP Virginia. We're not doing enough to support family caregivers. AARP Virginia is advocating for paid family leave as well as presumptive eligibility for Medicaid-funded home and community-based services. Presumptive eligibility would allow low-income individuals who need care to receive Medicaid in-home services while their application is being reviewed. Nearly a dozen other states have established Medicaid presumptive eligibility for in-home care. Now I'm going to talk about some birthdays with the time we have left, because when you're listening today, this is my birthday. I'm 85 years old. Kate Winslet turned 50 in October. The British actor is more than a Titanic movie star. She's also a six-time Oscar nominee with one win, Best Actress for The Reader. Indie Spirit. Following the global success of Titanic, Winslet opted for roles in smaller films, such as Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. Making a Difference. For narrating the 2009 documentary A Mother's Courage, Talking Back to Autism, Winslet co-founded the nonprofit Golden Hat Foundation, which works to change perceptions of people with autism, and co-authored The Golden Hat, Talking Back to Autism. A new challenge? She will make her directorial debut and star in Goodbye June, a drama written by her 21-year-old son, Joe Anders. Her birthday plans were, "I want to spend the year doing 50 remarkable things," Winslet told Harper's Bazaar. "Whether that's a particular hike I've never done or acts of kindness, I'm gathering a little list." What a great idea. And then more milestone birthdays. These are a bit old, but November 30th is Ben Stiller, comedic actor, reprised his role in Adam Sandler's Happy Gilmore 2, released last year. Yo-Yo Ma's birthday is October 7th. He's a celebrated classical musician, prefers to play an 18th century cello named Petunia. Whoopi Goldberg, his birthday is November 13th. The View co-host and actor has co-founded the All Women's Sports Network. Goldie Hawn's birthday was November 21st. She remains active in Mind Up, a children's mental health organization she founded. Julie Andrews was October 1st. Screen legend recently directed a stage production of The Great American Mousicle. Now, Julie Andrews was 90, Goldie Hawn was 80, Whoopi Goldberg was 70, Yo-Yo Ma was 70, and Ben Stiller, 60. Well, let's look at some more birthdays. Tiger Woods. This is happy birthday, Big 5-0, December 30th. The golf legend has been a star player from the start. Early years, Eldrick Taunt Williams was born in Cypress, California, to Earl, a retired U.S. Army officer, and Coltilda, originally from Thailand. They nicknamed their son Tiger in honor of a friend of Earl's, a South Vietnamese colonel, who shared the moniker. Young talent. Woods began playing golf as a toddler and was so impressive that at a young age, he appeared on The Mike Douglas Show, and that's incredible. College to pro. In 1994, Woods joined the Stanford University golf team. He turned pro after 2 years. Record collection. Woods was rated the number one golf player in the world for the most consecutive weeks, 281, and most total weeks, 683 in history. In 2019, he became the second oldest golfer to win the Masters at 43. On aging, the fire still burns to compete, Woods said in 2024, but the body just won't recover like it used to. That's part of an athlete's journey. And then some more milestone birthdays. Jeffrey Wright, December 7th, Emmy and Tony-winning actor, starred in 2025's The Phoenician Scheme, was 60. Gina Davis, January 21st, actor, wrote and illustrated The Girl Who Was Too Big for the Page, a children's book, turned 70. John Lydon, January 31st, former Sex Pistol, Johnny Rotten, launched a 2025 tour with his band Public Image Limited. He turned 70. Bette Midler, December 1st. Entertainer is active with the New York Restoration Project, a nonprofit she founded. She turned 80. Dolly Parton, January 19th. Singer's Imagination Library, which gives free books to kids, celebrated 30 years in 2025, and she turned 80. Finally, someone older than I am, Alan Alda, January 28th. actor recently made a cameo in the Four Seasons, the Netflix series based on his 1981 film, and he turned 90. Well, I'm going to end our program today with a few more money-saving tips. Under the heading of Buy It Used, think local for big stuff. For bulky items like furniture and exercise equipment, stick with local listings on websites such as OfferUp or Facebook Marketplace. You'll avoid hefty shipping costs, plus you'll have a chance to inspect items before you plunk down the cash. Buy vintage clothing in person. While there are websites that sell used clothing, brick-and-mortar thrift shops are still your best bet because you can make sure the item fits and assess its condition before you buy. Some resale websites don't allow returns or have high restocking fees on top of shipping you paid. But look online for secondhand high-end fashion. You can save up to 50% on items such as designer bags and dresses, which are less likely to show up at thrift stores. Check out sites like TheRealReal.com, R-E-A-L-R-E-A-L.com, and Rebag.com that promise to inspect items and guarantee their quality and authenticity. Save with refurbished electronics. Cell phones, laptops, and other electronics have a few moving parts to wear out, so refurbished items really can be as good as new, tech experts say. Recently, for example, a refurbished 13-inch MacBook Air at Apple.com was $829, a savings of $170 over a new one of the same model. Check the warranty. If you buy it directly from manufacturers such as Dell or Apple, you'll likely get the same coverage that comes with a new item. Now moving on to the heading of personal finance, pay your mortgage every 2 weeks. If you pay half your monthly mortgage biweekly, you'll end up making one extra monthly payment each year. The extra amount is applied to the principal. So a $350,000 mortgage at 7% would be paid off in 23.7 years instead of 30, saving $120,619 in interest. Good deal. Well, folks, we have run out of time for today's episode of Modern Maturity. I hope you've enjoyed listening. Please join me next time. I'm Karen Edwards, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Modern Maturity is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. And thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.